First, a recent report from the Wisconsin Policy Forum found local government debt is at record levels here in the state. The state's biggest cities had the most debt, but debt grew the fastest in towns, raising the possibility that someday communities big and small in Wisconsin might have to cut back on key services like libraries and police to catch up. Our next guest sees this happening across the country. He argues a big part of the problem is the way our communities are designed, saying things like sprawl and large-scale development have left us with more infrastructure costs than local governments can afford. In order to make communities financially stable, he wants us to embrace a more incremental, one-step-at-a-time style of development where small improvements are made over time. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What does development look like in your community? Do you need a car to get around where you live? Is all the new stuff a big development, whether it's commercial or residential, on the outskirts of town? Or are you seeing cool stuff happen in the downtown parts of your community? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Charles Marone is an urban planner and former engineer. He's the founder and president of the nonprofit group Strong Towns. Chuck, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
If I'm reading you right, you're looking for kind of a mindset change for how we think about development in communities, big and small. I want to start with what you see as the downsides of our current way of thinking, where we want that big new commercial development, the big new residential development, and we run our sewers and electrical out to it. Where do we start to go wrong there?
Yeah, I think this report too kind of highlights the signal is kind of the end game of this approach. What we've really tried to do is explain why cities struggle financially, because we have been conditioned to see cities that are growing and growing very quickly as being prosperous. If you have that new subdivision, if you have that new development, if you are getting that new big box store, your balance sheet looks good. You've got lots of cash. People are moving there. It's in a sense, the place to be. But local governments take on, as they grow in this way, enormous promises for the future that are not reflected at all on their balance sheet. We have to maintain that road now. We have to maintain that sewer pipe. We have to someday fix that sidewalk. And when those promises start to come due, what we see is that there just is not enough tax base there. There's not enough wealth there. There's actually not enough there to fund all of those promises. And that's when cities start to get financially into a lot of trouble.
Now, you have some maps and graphics that I think were surprising to me, I think would be surprising to most people. You just looked at how much is the local government spending in a place versus how much is it taking in a place? Where are they making money? Where are they losing money? What do we learn when we start to look at charts like that?
It's amazing because this has been done. And there's a group called Urban 3 out of Asheville, North Carolina, that really pioneered this approach. Their principal is a good friend of mine. And we've sat down and looked at hundreds of different cities. And what we see time and time again is that the neighborhoods that were built prior to the Great Depression, and we can think of these as neighborhoods where people can walk, you don't have to walk. They still largely accommodate people driving and you know, modern American living. These are not places with horse and buggies, but they're older neighborhoods. They're neighborhoods built in a kind of a different way. They tend to be cash flow positive, even when they're poor, even when they're occupied by very poor people, even when they're kind of run down. These places tend to generate more revenue for the community than they generate ongoing expenses. The further you get out from those core neighborhoods and the closer you get to today, the most modern stuff built is actually the worst. Over a life cycle, so not just, you know, the developer comes in and builds it and gives it to the city and the city gets it for free, but when the city actually has to go out and take care of stuff, the further you go out time to today, the more cash flow negative it becomes. The stuff we built the last 30 years is financially the most ruinous that cities have on their balance sheets.
And people might hear us say the word cities and think you're talking about big cities, you know, huge urban metropolitan areas. You've done work in places like Lafayette, Louisiana, Brainerd, Minnesota, not tiny towns, but not your big sprawling metropolis. These are things you're seeing in communities of a lot of different sizes.
It's absolutely. I mean, I'm from Brainerd. Brainerd's a city of 14,000. The questions that I, you know, explore at Strong Towns came out of my work here and recognizing that we were doing everything we could to grow very, very quickly. But financially, we were just a basket case. We didn't have any money to do anything. We laid off our fire department. We were cutting back the library hours. We were doing all this stuff that affected people's quality of life. Yet, you know, we just heard the Foxconn update. We were doing our own kind of Foxconn things here, where we were out chasing that next development and chasing that next big thing. This is a cycle we see in cities of all sizes. And what you get in a large city is you, in a sense, have more going on. And so sometimes it's harder to, you know, figure out exactly where the money is sloshing around, because there's a lot of different things. When you get into smaller cities, what you have is just a much more fragile system. Smaller cities have less fallback position. There's fewer Peters to rob to pay the Paul that you owe, in a sense. And so what we see in small towns is that the problems manifest a lot more quickly and a lot more urgently than they do in a large city.
We're talking to Charles Marone with the group Strong Towns, saying we need to rethink the way we think about growth in our towns and cities, big and small, that big project on the fringe may cost us more in the long run, maybe more than we can pay. That's part, he says, of what's driving many communities in Wisconsin and elsewhere into long-term debt. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions for our guest. Maybe you want to share something about your own local experience. 800-642-1234 is the number, or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's bring on a caller now. Samantha is with us in Menominee. Samantha, hi.
Hey there. I'm a big fan of the Strong Towns organization, and I was hoping your guest could provide listeners with a definition of the term strode, which I know is something that you guys have discussed as an organization, and how communities can use changes in zoning to prevent those kind of spaces from proliferating in our communities.
Samantha, thanks for the call. And that word strodes, I know you're familiar, Charles, it's street and road put together. It's big, fast-moving traffic in places like roads and places where you want streets where there's a lot of pedestrian traffic. Can you talk a little more about strodes and how they can cause trouble?
Exactly. We were looking for a word to describe essentially the most expensive type of transportation investment we could make with the least amount of financial return. And, you know, we try to draw a distinction between a street and a road, a street being a platform for building wealth within a community. It's the framework for creating a place is a street, and a road is a connection between places. On a road, you want to move very quickly. On a street, you actually want things to slow down so you can thicken a place up and actually get a really good return on our public and private investments. A strode does neither of these. A strode, from a public balance sheet standpoint, is a really expensive thing to build. You've got multiple lanes, turning lanes. It's also the lowest returning style of development. So you tend to get strip malls, big box stores, things that I think in our minds, we think, oh, you know, you're doing really well if you can get the Walmart. Sure, the Walmart creates a lot of tax base. It creates a lot of cash flow for the city, but it comes at an enormous expense in terms of sewer and water and road and pipe and all of the infrastructure you've got to build and maintain. And these buildings tend to last, you know, a couple decades, and then they go away, and then you just have the cost with no revenue. And so the idea of a strode is to kind of recognize this specific type of transportation investment and associated pattern of development as being distinct and different from what you would find on a street or what you would find on a really well-designed road.
Thanks for that call. Go to Dave now in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Dave.
Hi there. Sturgeon Bay just approved, I think it's about $700,000 to extend utilities down Highway 57 for the purpose of allowing a fleet farm development. And there's other areas in the city that have adequate water, sewer, and probably a better retail area. But they did that. And in addition, in the state of Wisconsin, we amongst other states, but we have what's called dark store property tax fights, where the big boxes can claim despite what they sell for on the open market, and I'm a developer, I understand what they sell for, that the big boxes can claim that they should be assessed as vacant, which then is huge tax giveaway to the big boxes who are going to go where their sales are regardless. And then that tax burden, of course, is passed on to the average taxpayer because you still have to pay for services. And then, yes, in 20 years, maybe the market moves on and maybe that store does go vacant. And now you have a vacant store that hasn't even paid its share of taxes all along the way.
Dave, thanks a lot for the call. Charles, Dave, seeing the life cycle of the big box store, do you see that, in effect, a government subsidy for that kind of development that Dave says doesn't pan out?
No, it's a huge government subsidy. And this gets into the commitment that cities make. When we go out and build a road as a community, so our local government, you know, the board of directors, in a sense, directing our municipal corporation, our city, the community we live in, goes out and makes an investment in a road and a pipe and drainage systems. Those are forever investments. They don't go away. It's not like you're getting married and you say, well, you know, for the first life cycle, we're good. And then after that, this is an infinite investment that we make as a community. We promise that we will maintain all this stuff. And often we go, and you see this with Fleet Farms, will come in as an example and build out, and we'll run the infrastructure out there, and then we'll keep running it beyond that. And so now there's people beyond that that are dependent on the infrastructure we put in for Fleet Farm to actually serve them as well. Then the Fleet Farm goes away, or the big box store goes away, or you wind up with a store that is a lesser use, a lower tax paying use, or you get the dark store phenomenon, which we can talk about, which kind of artificially lowers tax rates for these large corporations. What happens then is they, in a sense, as part of the marriage, can walk away, but we as a community cannot. And so this asymmetry of obligation is a huge problem that cities in chasing growth in this way don't often stop to consider. We're making a forever promise. They're making a short-term revenue promise on a building that is really hard to adapt and recycle to a different use.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Charles Marone, founder and president of the group Strong Towns, with us today. After a recent report showed local government debt is at record levels across Wisconsin, Chuck's group says sprawling development is part of the problem, causing financial instability for communities around the country. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. Are you facing these questions in your own community, large or small? What questions do you have for our guest? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about financial instability in our towns and cities, high levels of debt in Wisconsin communities and elsewhere, and whether the way we do development these days is part of the problem. Charles Marone stays with us from the group Strong Towns. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you want to share a story from your community, a question for our guest, what do you want to see local leaders look at when it comes to what to do with often scarce resources? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Chuck, you have a different vision for when local leaders sit down, community members sit down and try to figure out, hey, where do we put our resources to develop a community? What would you like to see it look like?
Well, at the end of the day, if we're trying to make good financial investments, investments that actually make our communities wealthier, lead to a higher quality of life, lower tax rates, that kind of thing. Those investments don't look like the big project. Those investments tend to look more like a collection of smaller things. When we can thicken up our neighborhoods, when we can take and add more ratepayers to a segment of pipe, add more units of housing to a neighborhood, when we can get that old store that's on the existing system that's kind of in a rundown state, built up a little bit and reactivated and a new business in there. Those things tend to cost very little in terms of capital, but have an immense effect on the overall tax base. If we can grow our tax base by 5% over what just general inflation will be, our communities will get rich. I mean, they really will start adding a lot of wealth without adding any additional expense, really. And you know, if we look at, I don't think we should think of cities as a business, but cities can use business principles to understand what is going on in them. And if we think about it for a moment in that way, what we find is that the quality of life things, making your parks better, adding street trees, making it easier for people to bike and walk, these are actually the best financial investments that we can make in a place because they're relatively cheap and they spread out a lot of wealth or a lot of value increase over a really broad area, which is, you know, ultimately what you're trying to do.
It seems like there's a certain political incentive to go in the other direction. If I'm a politician, I can show up at a ribbon cutting for the new development or the new bridge or what have you. I can't show up at the ribbon cutting to fill that pothole or plant that tree. It doesn't sound as exciting.
It's funny because the local politicians that do this really well, they have ribbon cuttings every day, you know, for filling potholes and fixing up the park and planting trees. They just do it differently, right? They're very smart about it. And in a kind of a social world, you know, where we use social media, it's one of those things where instead of having the one big event during your administration, you've got 1,000 small ones, and it's much more effective politically. I think the political problem, if we want to talk about it, is the way that the state and the federal government approach these things. I mean, you do have when the state of Wisconsin gives cities monies to build infrastructure or helps subsidize that approach, when the federal government does likewise, when we have artificially low interest rates, what we wind up doing is encouraging cities, giving them massive incentives to do these things that are in short-term interests of the state and federal government. State government makes their money off of income tax. They make their money off of sales tax. So transactions are really great for them. Same with the federal government. What they don't do, either the state or federal government, is take on that long-term promise to fix that street, to maintain that pipe. So what you have is a system where the dialogue, the conversation, the incentives, the way we even talk about this from a top-down standpoint, is all about the next big project that we can do. And that's really not in the interests of cities. It's not in the interests of local governments, and it's not in the interests of the people who live in them.
On the demand side of things, I think there's a notion about Americans, maybe a caricature, that we don't want denser development, taking more intense advantage of our local infrastructure. We want to live away from downtown. We want to drive to that big box store and park in the parking lot with plenty of spaces for us to park in. True or false?
I think that there is a big element of truth to that. But it's always important to point out that all of these things come at a price point. The most expensive real estate in North America is in Manhattan. New York City and San Francisco, two of the densest cities in the United States. If you go and talk to people there, they will tell you that they like living there. They want to live there, and they're willing to pay high amounts of money to do that. I think if you have very nice places, if you have places where the parks are well-maintained, the sidewalks are well-maintained, there's great street trees, you've got good urban design, people tend to prefer those places over the more windy, cul-de-sac-y, beige-ish, you know, kind of development every day. There's a huge premium that people will pay to live in those type of complete neighborhoods, a neighborhood with a coffee shop up the street and a local butcher and a local florist and all these things. That used to just be development. That used to just be how we built things. I think that there's a stated preference today, perception, because that is the only thing that the market really creates. And every time we see something different created in the market, we see it gobbled up faster than it can be built at a premium price.
On the other hand, I've kind of pointed toward the opposite political view. I think most people want their water to work and their electricity and their roads to not have potholes and things like that. How can we, I guess, develop that as a constituency if that's the kind of thing we want?
Well, and most people want their taxes to be low or reasonable. And most people want, I mean, there's a whole list of things in terms of, you know, just the core competencies of government that people expect. I think it's important to recognize that the people of Detroit did not wake up one day and decide decide that they didn't care how their local government ran. It just slowly fell apart. We have had this introspection this year about Jackson, Mississippi and their water problem. That did not develop in the last 6 months. That's been a slow rolling disaster over a long period of time. When we step back and we look at cities across North America, when we look at cities across Wisconsin, what we see is the same kind of slow building disaster taking place in each and every one of them. It's not because they're poorly run. It's not because the people there are incompetent or greedy or short-term. It's because the underlying development model is the same development model that bankrupted Detroit. It's the same development model that has bankrupted Jackson, Mississippi. And it is slowly grinding all of these cities down. And you know, what you see as a result is higher taxes, lower levels of service, and growing levels of debt. And this most recent report just kind of affirms that this is the overall trend that we see in our cities. It's just another data point to kind of affirm the fact that this development model is not working long term for our local governments.
Chuck, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. You take care.
You too. That's Charles Marone, founder and president of the group Strong Towns, with us today to make the case for a return to incremental development, smaller scale development in towns and cities after a recent report showed local debt at record levels in Wisconsin.